One of the Thai idioms for meditation is making an effort. And of course, it means making an effort with the mind. There's the physical effort doing walking meditation, the effort that goes through sitting long periods of time, dealing with the pain that comes up when you sit for long periods of time. But primarily, it's an effort with the mind to gain some control over this very changeable mind we have. This one passage where the Buddha talks about the mind shifting around fast like a fish out of water, flipping and flopping around. But there's another passage where he says the mind is so quickly, so quick to change that there's no real analogy for it. And the Buddha was a master of analogies. So this mind can change very easily. You think you've got it headed in one direction, all of a sudden you find it's going off in some other direction. And by the time you figured out which other direction it's going, it's changed directions again. So we've got to find some way of getting hold of the mind. And this is John Tate once said, you can't tie it down with chains. You've got to give it a foundation. You've got to get it a place where it can take refuge. So it can have a good solid basis for its actions. This is why when the Buddha set forth the pattern for going forth, it's simply the act of taking refuge. You go to the Buddha for refuge, the Dhamma for refuge, the Sangha for refuge. Three times. You say that three times. And in one sense, it does mean that you take your strength from things outside, the example of the Buddha. If we didn't have the example that there was someone who could find true happiness through his own efforts, it'd be a very daunting prospect to look for true happiness. We didn't know where we would look or whether it would succeed. You think about the Buddha. He didn't have any guarantees when he went out, you know, that he'd find what he was looking for. We have at least the example of the Buddha and the Sangha, that there are people who've claimed that true happiness can be found through your own efforts, and they're happy to show the way. And then we have the Dhamma, which explains things, gives directions to our practice. So that's one source of strength in our effort. We have good examples who've left a very detailed path. And even though we talk about the path as one that you tread yourself, you still depend a lot on other people. As you noticed today, there wasn't just one person in the ordination hall. There was a whole community. The community of the monks who are accepting the new candidate, and the community of lay people giving their support, promising their support in the future. Because we are social animals. We do depend on other people. We do depend on one another. For good examples, for emotional support, the support of a good example, and for material support. All this is an important part of the practice. It takes a community for people to practice. But given that support, it's up to each of us to make the most of it, to put it to good use. As the Buddha said, one of the motivations for going as far as you can in the practice is the realization that the greater your attainment, then the more rewards accrue to the people who've been supporting you. It's not just you who benefit. The people who support you benefit as well. This goes for all of us, lay or ordained. We depend on the support of others. To make progress in the practice. But when it comes to the actual doing, it's our own affair, because after all, we suffer from our own lack of skill, and we have to develop skill through our own powers of observation. As the Buddha said, let someone come who is truthful and observant, someone who is no deceiver. And I'll teach that person the Dharma. Those are the two prerequisites. On one hand, that you're truthful and not deceptive. It means you're truthful to yourself. When you make a mistake, you admit you made the mistake. And you're truthful to the people you live with. And you have to be observant. As John Furling said when I went back to stay with him, don't expect that everything is going to be handed to you. If you're going to practice, you have to learn how to think like a thief. Look around. Use your eyes. Notice the examples of others. Sometimes they're good examples, sometimes they're not. But pay attention, because it's through developing your own powers of observation that you're going to see not only things outside, but things inside yourself. And everything that you need to know is already displaying itself all the time. Your greed is displaying itself. Your anger, your delusion is displaying yourself, which you just don't notice. You don't see it for what it is. It's not that there's some hidden story going on. We're hiding from the story. We're refusing to see it, because our attention is elsewhere. So you've got to turn around and look at what you're doing, look at the results of what you're doing, and be as observant as possible. We make the mind quiet so we can be observant. We practice the precepts. We're generous so that we can be observant. Notice what happens to the mind when you're not generous. Notice what happens when you are generous. The more generous you can be, the more observant the mind can be of its greed, of its aversion, of its fears. The more virtuous you are, the more you notice. Years back, I had a lay student who I was very strict with him with regard to little white lies. So I told him, you want to make sure that everything you say is true. And even the things that you think are not deceptive, in other words, things that you say in jest, it lowers the value of your speech. And at first he resisted this training, but was willing to give it a try. So he became very careful so that not even for the sake of a joke would he say an exaggeration or say something that wasn't really true. And it became a habit. Then a year or so later, we were visiting with a Dharma teacher someplace else. And the Dharma teacher started going off on a riff. And my student noticed that because he had been doing this training, the riff, which was a lot of exaggeration and fooling around, really seemed jarring. The more precise you are in your behavior, the more you see. Especially when you meditate, get the mind still, so even the slightest movement of the mind shows itself to your awareness. That's when you really see where you're causing stress and where you don't have to, and what the alternatives are. In other words, the other ways of acting, thinking, speaking that cause less harm, that are less burdensome to yourself and other people. You notice it. You see. Even though this sort of thing has been happening all along, all of a sudden you see it as if for the first time. This is why in the forest tradition the training is very meticulous. And in the case of Ajahn Phua, there are a lot of times he wouldn't explain things. You have to figure them out for yourself. Because he wanted you to get used to being as observant as you could. Because then you would take that habit and apply it to your meditation. So this is why the path is both gradual and sudden. Gradual in the sense that it takes time to become more observant. But sudden in the sense that when you see something, it's not as if you had to dig down deep into something far away. It's something that's been here all along. When your powers of observation are up for it, you see immediately. That's the suddenness of the path. And your ability to observe in this way gives a lot of power to your practice as well. Again, John Fu noticed one time, he said that when your views are wrong, everything is wrong, and you keep pushing and pushing and pushing, all in the wrong direction, and nothing seems to work. But when you notice, oh, this is connected to that, I do this, and this is what the suffering that comes as a result, you let go immediately. You don't even have to tell the mind. It sees the cause and it sees the effect and sees how they're connected. And that the connection is something you don't want and you have an alternative. When you observe that fact, when your powers of observation are up for it, there's no way you're going to hold on. This is why being observant is such an important aspect of right effort. So with any skill, it's not just the amount of hours that you put in the practice or the amount of effort you throw into the practice. It's your powers of observation that make all the difference. You watch what you're doing again and again and again. Until you detect something you didn't see before. Something subtle, but there, right there. Not far away at all. And all of a sudden the phrase, say, that you were playing on the piano becomes a lot easier, a lot more expressive. Your stroke as a swimmer gets more efficient. because you're observant. So these are the two qualities that have to be brought to the path. One, be very truthful, both to yourself and other people. Two, be observant. Those are the two qualities that make for progress.